The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPODU, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 227 for Friday the 14th of April 2010. My name is Jim Race and I am sort of flying on my own, but really not. In fact, I ended up with a... Martin is otherwise indisposed this week. He had a whole bunch of stuff to take care of with his Wales Air Ambulance Service, which he flies for. Gave a call to a good friend of the show and intended to talk for a couple of minutes about the great racing that we had at Mons over last week. And, I figured 5-10 minutes, that'd be great. And somehow that managed to stretch out to nearly an hour. But it's an hour I think you're all going to enjoy. And that gentleman's name is James Witham. And I know a lot of you have appreciated the information that we and talk that we had with him in the past, so I hope you'll appreciate this as well. I also have a quick one with Chaz Davis from the Dubai airport during his layover on the way to Kyalami World Superbike this coming weekend. Briefly talked with Tom Sykes earlier today from Johannesburg, or probably at Kyalami at the circuit itself, and that was kind of my bad because I wanted to get a little bit more in, but he was busy, they're busy, no problem. In addition, this week we have an interview that we're going to have to basically split over two because I spent a lot of time on the phone yesterday with Eskil Suter, who those of you that are in the know knows that he runs Suter Racing Technologies and has been well, deeply involved with motorcycle road racing and a fair amount of Formula One stuff over the years and runs, I believe it's now 11 Moto2 chassis on the grid and currently holds the manufacturer's point standings. And we talk about a lot of really cool stuff. I'm pretty sure that that's going to be one of the highlights, but between that and James, he and I could just go on in depth and I will apologize for the rambling. But before then, let me get to a couple of listener emails. Just very briefly, I got one from Paul Pacey. He just said, "Hi, Jim. Just wondering if you could chase up the status of the FB Corsa MotoGP entry and its rider, Gary McCoy, for the next show." And so I did, Paul, and thank you for the email. And the answer I got back was, and I love the people that are there, but it was relatively vague. It said, "Very soon we'll be updating all the press and fans about FB Corsa's activity, but just to let you know, the development of the bike is making progress." So in other words, that's not a whole lot of information, but I did ask. We also had another listener email, and we occasionally get these, and I'm going to let you fans judge, and feel free to send back in, if you will, rebuttals, denials, whatever, or support, of course, for this position. Got a listener that is unhappy with the amount of World Superbike versus MotoGP covers we've been having, basically since the beginning of the year. And as I pointed out to this listener, who basically said he was going to stop listening to the show, I said, by this time this weekend is over, World Superbike will have run 12 races as compared to 2 races for MotoGP. And I said, it's hard to report on races if they aren't happening. Now, if you break that down even further, you could say, okay, World Superbike, World Supersport, so that would be 18 versus 6. And so it's still the same very skewed value. And it's primarily because the MotoGP season has been starting later and later. And there's no doubt that MotoGPOD is still MotoGPOD. One of the big things about it is that the access to the World Superbike teams and the World Superbike paddock and racers is, frankly, a lot easier for someone of our ilk, even though I'm a very persistent bugger, in getting contact and getting in touch with these people. And, in fact, I do have stuff lined up on the MotoGP front, including an interview next week, which I hope will come through, and I've got a positive line on it, so we'll have a MotoGP rider on here, and everything that I do in that direction will lead towards another step. It's all like kind of a long set of stairs. But in the meantime, right now, I am kind of focusing on what we have available to us now. And, you know, that's what I'm focusing on. In addition, and really, to be honest, you know, there's been a whole lot of people that are trying to create a whole bunch of silly season rumors this early. And guys, it's way too late. Or I'm not late, early. Stoner signing for Honda, I will step out on a limb and I will say, I don't think so. I will say that with muy gusto. And then, you know, Ducati once again courting Rossi. We're two races in. Give it a rest. Where are most of the sources of these rumors coming from? Same place that we get them all the time, which is from primarily Italian and also the Spanish press. And basically everybody picks up on it and expounds. There is at least an Americanism called the telephone game, where, you know, you pass something on and it gets reinterpreted all the way along the line until basically it ends up as a, in theory, de facto fact, when in fact it's not. My suggestion is to just let it wait. And I'll leave it at that. So, what do we have for the show this week? Interviews. We have, okay, so the interviews that we have this week are, so the main topics, of course, are James and I reviewing Monza. There is a great race weekend coming up this weekend in Kyalami. Actually, there are several great races coming up. There's the Kyalami World Superbike World Supersport. And I'm not going to do a whole bunch of a preview. There are tons of information about it, especially, and I highly suggest that you go to World Superbike Online and take a look at all the data that they're putting out. In addition, we have one of my favorite races of the year, and in fact, the BBC is putting out some fantastic coverage, and I believe it's going to be Steve Parrish and probably James Witham. I believe that's who did it last year. On top of that, though, if they do what they did last year, you'll be able to at least listen and accordingly possibly watch it live on Saturday, which is fantastic and a very serious nod and tip of the hat to BBC and I channel for doing that. Just go to Google or whatever your search engine of choice is and type in NW200 space BBC and see what comes up. Poke around, and I will try and have a good link in the show so that all you folks can find that. Jim Race here for MotoGP OD. I've got James Witham on the line. I really appreciate you coming back on, James. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, yeah.
Good. It was fun trying to track you down. Just wanted to get kind of your insight into what was a really interesting weekend at Monza. And frankly, Monza is one of those legendary tracks. You know, a lot of people like to say that Assen is the cathedral, but Monza is like this, it's almost like a Roman ruin if you think about it.
Yeah, it actually is as well. You know, it is the only circuit left in the world now where we go with Eurosport that I actually get, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck standing up when we go into the circuit, and it's always been like that. And a lot of that's because I've ridden there a lot, but a lot of it's also because a lot of things have happened there. You know, the whole history of the big banking and it's and such a high-speed circuit. It is a brilliant place to go either to watch or to race, to commentate.
What all bikes have you raced there?
I've never, ever raced a two-stroke there. I've raced mainly superbike because it was one of the ones that we always wanted to go and do wildcards there. So I've ridden, I reckon I've done 17 races there over the years. I was trying to figure it out this last weekend. And Super Sport 4 times and Superbike the rest. So, yeah, all 4 strokes.
And tell me, and I know that because everybody does, you snuck up past the fences onto the banking with your scooter and took a little jaunt, try to get up to the top. Actually, I know you did because you were giving Bernicle shit about not being able to make it up.
Yeah. I'll tell you what it is. I mean, the thing is, there's plenty of bank circuits in the States, and there's one piece of Brooklands left at Weybridge. There was the original bank circuit down near London. But this one's, it's all there. It's exactly as it was. It's a little bit of sort of grass and weeds growing through it in places, but it's absolutely still there. And they try and fence it off, but as usual with the Italians, they're not kind of that efficient and or that bothered, really. You know, there's not much health and safety involved. And we always get scooters on there. And you'd be surprised. You'd think, you know, going at sort of 50 miles an hour on a scooter, you'd be easily be able to scoop up to the top. But you can. You know, you fear, even at sort of 50 miles an hour, that you're going that slow and your angle against the wall is so much that you're just going to slide off the thing, you know. And we reckon, I've had a hire car on there, we managed to pull a bit of fence down when we were testing there. We were testing with the Italian team that, incidentally, the team I raced for 3 years in Supersport is based about 100 yards from the Lesmo Bend, just outside the circuit. So we tested there extensively. We got a hire car on there once, and we could just got up to about 90 miles an hour as all they had got. It was only a small engine thing. And that got us about a quarter of the way up. And if you actually tried to go up to the top and then let go of the wheel, it just fell back down. We reckon about 200 miles an hour would be the natural kind of, you know, speed that they'd take you to the top under centrifugal force.
Well, and I think what – I was actually reading some of the history of it the other day, and I think what they're saying is it's actually 80-degree banking at the top, which is just freaking nuts. I mean, that's insane. The track the track was built so that you never had to let off.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it does seem a daft idea now. And in fact, it was used not that long. It was wooden bankings when it was first built in the 20s. Yeah. The actual concrete never went up till – I think the 1950s, and they only used it till the early 60s. So I think the concrete banking only did about 10 or 12 years. And actually, the main reason they made the concrete bankings was to entice the Yanks over, because they were already racing on big ovals, and the Europeans wanted to get some of that. And the only way that the Americans had come over with their big sort of power cars was to race on ovals. And I think the first year they came, no European teams entered. The second year, I think Maserati and I think Ferrari joined in the thing, but it didn't actually last that long over there. You know, we soon got away from that onto you know, more sort of road style circuit.
Yeah. So and in fact, it was kind of funny listening to you and Jack reminisce this this week. But you know what? Let's just do a quick dive into the racing, because I know you, yeah. I don't want to keep you too long. Super Bowl was kind of interesting, and let's just touch on Super Bowl II and III and the people that made it in. Super Bowl II, Max Neukirchner, Lucas Gasso, who I'm kind of surprised is doing well, but not so much. Carlos Checa, Troy Corser, Camier, Quintoli, Byrne, Haga. That was the guys that made it through into second. And in the end, we had Biaggi on the freaking Aprilia missile, and you and I need to talk about that. Cal Crutchlow, Fabrizio, Johnny Ray, Haslam, Chaus, Toslin, and Sykes. What did you think of Super Bowl?
Yeah, I thought it was all right. Actually, I thought it went, in many ways, according to plan, i.e. the Sykes got through. There were certain things that were fairly unusual, one of them being, obviously, that Haga fared not that well. And yeah, a lot of people saying, well, yeah, none of the Ducatis went well, but Fabrizio did. You know, Fabrizio seemed to hold his own and almost got pole. In fact, they were in Super Bowl III, they were, or whichever way, the last one anyway, whichever way you look at it, the Ducati garage was, you know, doing backflips and high fives a little bit prematurely because they thought they'd got it, and they ended up actually third, you know, they got sort of bumped out of third. But it went according to plan. You knew that the Aprilias were going to be really quick because they're just quick, and it's a real speedball circuit. And the surprising thing was that although everybody went out there and they used the cut-throughs, you know that there's the chicanes, Astari and the first chicane, they've actually got bypass roads. It used to be the old circuit, obviously, the old tarmac's still there. And people used those to sort of whiz through and set up what they thought were going to be good slipstreaming moves on bikes that they thought were going to be, you know, the best ones to slipstream. Obviously, everybody tried to get on the back of Camier and Biard. Some did, some didn't. But the fun thing was for us, Biaggi just didn't seem bothered at all. Who went out behind him, he could just go out and do those times on his own, not bothered whatsoever. And that was a kind of telling thing for us, because he just knew he could do the times on his own. Everybody else, when he looked at the top speeds, tended to need a slipstream or even a couple of slipstreams to get a time, you know. So that was the main thing about Super Bowl, was it was a big indication that Biaggi was going to take some beating in the races.
Okay, so let me make sure that I understand you correctly as to what you said, and I completely understand how they changed the chicanes to have basically an asphalt runoff, and the guys have to make sure they come back on and don't gain any advantage. But do you actually, and I take your word as a long, long time racer and broadcaster, you actually think they were just essentially practicing slipstreaming to see what kind of depth they could get and how close they could get before they actually tipped into the corners and then just kind of let off and said, okay, I can get that close?
Yeah, I mean, they actually, what happens with the cutthroats is they know that the problem with them is that you can run straight on and not have to, you're not going to crash, you're not going to go on a gravel trap. So that tends to sort of take your eye and pull you into them, if you like, But what they were doing in practice, because obviously, if you get a quick lap that you've gone through the chicane, you've cut the chicane, that lap's deleted. But what people were doing is, because we say they're on their out lap or they're just cruising around that on a lap that isn't going to count anyway, if they saw somebody going through the chicane or a little bit in front of them, that they knew they wanted, obviously everybody recognises each other, they knew they wanted to get a slipstream off a fast man. If they saw a potential slipstream kind of victim that they wanted to use, they'd go through the chicanes just to, just to get a fast lap in, even though it wasn't going to count because it cut the chicanes, just to get onto somebody they wanted to get onto to get the quick lap. So it was kind of, what's the word? It was kind of tactical, There were people running through chicanes all the time and people just cruising around there, looking around, trying to get a slipstream, because it is really important that you get a slip in there, although for Biaggi it wasn't. He could do it on his own completely.
Yeah, I mean, and the speeds that he achieved there, I remember talking to Jules Rider, and the RSV4, frankly, is a MotoGP bike with mirrors, and all the advancement that they've done with it, especially with some of the team that they've got in that garage, is just outstanding and a little bit frightening.
Yeah. They're all, the thing is about them, they're all, they're kind of old guys, but if you look in that garage, the amount of experience, especially at GP level, that there is in that garage is a little bit frightening. They know exactly what they want. And when you look at that bike, you look at the Suzuki, you look at the Yamaha, it's an R1 or it's a GSXR, it's a Fireblade. When you look at that Aprilia, it just looks like the most kind of factory prototype thing you've ever seen. It does look beautiful, and it's so small and compact, and the guys in the garage know what they're doing, and you can tell that there's so much experience. They don't get flustered, they know what they can do, and it's you've heard about this gear driven cam versus the chain driven cam. Well, the fact is that the rest of the teams were really keen not to let Aprilia use the gear driven cams before Monza and at Monza. Because if they'd have been allowed to do that, they reckon they could have run closer tolerances, thereby getting more revs out of the thing, thereby probably another 5 brake horse. So, can you imagine with another 5-6 brake horse what it will look like at the weekend,
I heard they actually did use them at Assen, at least in FP1.
Yeah, we've heard also they weren't supposed to have done that, but the fact is that they've got this. They've got a kit coming out that they say that makes it legal. And the fact is, I've read through the rules, and it's really ambiguous. There was an existing rule that says the cams have to be, the valves have to be driven by the original method. Well, that to me says it's got to be whatever the road bike has. It has to be in this case chain. But then that's been superseded by a later ruling that says if a commercially available kit is produced, then that's all right. So it looks like they're going to be able to run it. Sometimes you just think, well, hang on, it's an Italian team with an Italian rider, and it's an Italian championship pretty much. So they seem to get away with more than what most teams would.
True, true. And you know what? It's funny because that harkens me back to something that I was reading not half an hour ago about the teapot. And the GSX 600F, and how the semi-liberalized use of titanium.
Yeah, I'll tell you what happened there. I mean, we were almost forced to race a Suzuki didn't have a J6R out at the, a 600 out at the time, and we were committed, shall we say, to doing a 600cc class. Then it's what became Super Sport, but it was called Senior Stock then. But it was essentially the same as Super Sport now. And we were committed to doing the class. Suzuki only had what you'd call a kind of, well, it's a tooling bike, really. It was a steel-framed, basic suspension, very kind of, well, put it this way, the bike shouldn't ever have gone track. But we were forced to use it, and we did some fairly, what you'd call, enthusiastic interpretation of the rule book as it stood, and the bike ended up fairly competitive, although you were never going to make it competitive. And we never cheated on, you know, the CCs. It stayed 600, and almost within the rules, but it was, you know, we did line it extensively, and, you know, it was close to the, sailing close to the wind, I think you'd say.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's just rip through the races here. Top five for race one, and in fact, then I want to talk about a couple of people that went out, including Johnny, which was actually had a comical moment, if you think about it. But top five, Max Biaggi, James Toslin, and James is having a hell of a resurgence. Cal Crutchlow, Leon Haslam, and Leon Camier with Chaus, surprisingly, in six, and I don't even think he broke up too many bikes this weekend. That top five, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a bad race, to be honest. That was the best race of the two, really, for a lot of reasons. Haslam was disappointed. He possibly had the slowest bike. It looked to be the slowest bike. The Yamahas were surprisingly quick. The fact is that everybody was going to struggle. They were always going to struggle to beat Biaggi. He did get past a couple of times, both by Toslin and by Haslam earlier on. And, they would spend half a lap setting a pass up, using the slipstream, using everything they could, and they'd get past. And it took him, halfway down the following straight to get back in front. It was always going to be a lot easier for Biaggi. So in that respect, the result went to what you'd think. I was really pleased to see Crutchlow running up front, getting a result and sort of fighting you. And looking, the Yamaha looked fairly settled. The Aprilia of Biaggi's looked kind of nervous, you know, very, very firm.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of skittish over the bumps. And there's a couple of real big bumps at Monza that are on the brakes, I think.
I think it was in Oscari, and you could see basically, I don't know how many times it looked like it wanted to bust into a tank slapper.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the big one is into Oscari, and there's also one going into Lesmo 1 that's quite a big one as well. And over those, Biaggi seemed to have a nervous bike, but it just didn't slow him down. And he didn't make any mistakes. And for all his experience, we've seen if he's pushed, Biaggi does make mistakes, tends to run on into corners and run wide, but he didn't this time. You know, he did everything dead right. Camier was the quickest man on track at one point, and he makes an habit of doing that. You know, later on in races, he seems to be able to sort of keep going, and his quickest laps are normally middle towards the end. And if he could actually get off the line and get going a bit quicker, he would have been in there as well. And Haslam seemed to struggle to, you know, stay with the quicker bikes. Really, I mean, he said he didn't have any problems in race one. He just said that the bike was generally a little bit slower than the Yams and the Aprilia, and his tyre going off. But he was keen to say, when he said his rear tyre went off with four to go, that it was no worse than anybody else. As he says, everybody was struggling with grip at the end.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was actually really cool to see Corser. You know, it dragged me all the way back to Brno last year when he spent a few laps leading, but he stuck with them for a long time, and he'll figure quite well in race two, and in fact their first podium, which I'm very proud of those guys for pulling off. And Tom Sykesy on the Kawi, seeing that up there as well, quite surprising.
Yeah, it was a good weekend for Tom. One of the reasons is, and I am belittling the effort at all, but you know, they've had not handling issues, but the bike just isn't the package yet, you know, but it is quick. I think electronics and kind of the finer points of getting a bike that's usable handling-wise and the electronics are there, sort of weaky suit. But when you get to Monza, and I've done this before, I've gone with a bike that's got, say, terrible chatter or whatever, you're having issues everywhere else. you get to Monza, it's not the most difficult circuit to set your bike up for. You know, all your problems seem to sort of melt away handling-wise there. You get to there and think, oh, the bike's all right now. And I think the bike allowed Tom to do what we all know he's capable of doing. He don't crash a lot, he's quick. And the bike allowed him this weekend to do that because it has some legs. You know, the Kawasaki's not slow, but yet normally it's not just the finished package yet. And it didn't matter so much at Monza, he was able to do. And it was pleasing. The first person I sent a text to after the racing was, Tom saying good ride, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. And was it race one that Johnny crashed out in? And I forget which corner it was, maybe in Parabola.
Yeah, but and that was the thing. What the big thing really is race one was, for me, was Johnny Ray was going so fast. You look at his lap times, he got the quickest lap in race one, and it was going to, I mean, I think at least going to get up to the back of Biaggi and have a race with Biaggi and maybe win it. And he was pushing and pushing. And you looked at the laps, the timing screen, and he was just getting quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker. And he's capable of doing that. Jonathan Ray's blindingly fast. Well, not even when things go his way. He's capable of riding around problems. He was going quick and really just a kind of bridge too far for him. He went into the Parabolica, which is the last corner on the track before the start and finish, and he went in a little bit wide. It is a little bit bumpy. And I think a combination of those things, he got round a couple of riders going in there. I think he would have taken him into about third. Went in, brakes still on, went over, washed the front out, and it was a crash. And if you saw him, he got up, immediately sprang to his feet, ran back to where he last saw the bike, which was not where it was then. He ran back to a hole in the gravel where it last hit the floor, but really it bounced over onto the body. So, I mean, the fact that he thought he was going to get back on it was kind of optimistic in the extreme, you know. This thing has gone down the road at 120 miles an hour and knocked the front end off itself. But, you know, he's keen, and I think that it was... He was possibly the unluckiest man of the weekend, I think, in both races.
Yeah, he really was, because he still, you know, two outs, frankly, in two races is not going to stand you in good stead for the rest of the weekend. But yeah, you're right. When he was running back to look for that, I don't think there is any fan. Because one of the reasons is because he was able to get up and run. So, okay, the rider is okay. Now we get this comedic act where he's trying to figure out where the fuck his bike is. Nowhere to be seen. And yeah, I bet that thing came back in several boxes, unless they toss in the rubbish bin. So, and Sakai on the Yosh Suzuki, man, he had a high side to hell, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he'd been beating himself to a pulp all weekend, really. The thing is, we went out watching on the Friday, you know, when we didn't get there for the first session, but we got there for his, what would have been his second look at the circuit, his second session round there. And he was on it, you know, he's flinging the thing about, we watched through a scouring, he's turning it, you know, he's flicking through those chicanes. And we thought, yeah, you know what, yeah, and he comes with a bit of a pedigree, and, you know, why shouldn't he run somewhere near? The bike looked quick, the bike looked really good as well, the bike's... The colour scheme and everything else, it looked the part. But he crashed his brains out. I think four crashes throughout the weekend, and the last one was just one of those, not so quick, but, you know, painful. You just knew when he hit the floor, it hurt. You know, he knocked the wind out of himself. It wasn't a good weekend for him.
Yeah, those high sides where you're not moving quickly, but essentially what you do is almost get launched straight up about 10 feet and land 5 feet over on your back, and everything just goes kaboom.
And yeah, don't. I can remember you just bringing it all flooding back now.
not in a good way, right?
No.
All right, so rolling to race two, our top five there. And the one thing we didn't mention for race one was Haga was pretty far out, but he played a little bit more of a role through attrition in some ways in race two. So your top five, Biaggi, Haslam, Corser, Kemmerer, Sykes, and then Haga in sixth, and Ginter's in seventh, which was great.
Yeah, I mean, Guinciale's, I like Guinciale. He's smooth, doesn't crash a lot, and I think we've got more to come from Guinciale. I think he can run near the front at points in the rest of the season. Really pleased for Haslam because I don't know whether you knew it or not, but Haslam had problems the whole race with leaking water, and he doesn't really know where it was coming from, but all he knew is the temperature went up to, well, I mean, how did the thing keep going? the water temperature went sky high, the oil temperature had gone sky high, and it had lost a lot of power, which is why it looked... Go on.
In Parc Fermé, there was that conversation where Troy was basically pointing at his belly pan and going, dude, you were spitting water out all around the last part of the track.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it was leaking, apparently, from about mid-race is where the temperature went up. And looking back, Leon reckons that that's why he got that near high side, you know, in the first chicane.
Oh, man. And that was so funny, too, because they cut back to Ollie and in the garage. And I saw her looking at him like, you know, is she more worried about him crashing or more worried about his package?
Well, a bit of both, I think. But she would be worried about his package, you know, I must admit. But it was a big one. In fact, he cracked his wrist in the incident.
Mm.
It's not going to stop him, but he won't stop him racing in South Africa. But, yeah, it was quite a big one. And looking back, he said that was probably it. There's something, you know, water was getting on the tyre, but... the worst thing for him, he said, was the fact that the temperature got up so much that the bike was a dog. The bike was slowly, and in fact, the team said with figures for oil and temperature, oil and water temperature like they were having, they don't know how it finished. They were quite pleased to finish. So he kind of got out of jail free, really, with Cruxall going out, and Leon Haslam able to finish second. You know, he came away from there last night. He told me, you know what? That's a good meeting for us. You know, we knew we were going to struggle here, and we've done all right. Again, Biagi, once Cal Crookston, really pleased for Cal. Really, really pleased for Cal. He was running with him, and typical Cal Crookston. I spoke to him after the race, and Cal says, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to beat him. I could have definitely beat him. But that's Cal. You know, Cal's really confident. But he did look to have the speed to do it. And you can guarantee one thing. If Cal would have been within striking distance, and I mean anywhere within striking distance, on the last few corners, there's no way he wouldn't have had a go. He would have had a pop, because that's Cal. So Cal came away fairly pleased. Not Cal's one of these riders where, you know, because of what's happened in the championship so far, and because it's his first real going superbike, he would much rather be fast and have someone go wrong than him be slow all weekend, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. And... There have been sort of whispers and rumors that he thought he had a oil leak in race one, which they never found, and that on a case cover that apparently materialized in race two. Did you hear anything more about that?
I didn't. The only thing, the official line is that a stone possibly or probably from Biagi's bike went through an oil cooler on Cal Crutchlow's bike. So that's all they're saying. I mean, you knew what was going to happen. I mean, you saw the smoke coming out. You knew that he didn't know, so you knew it wasn't a major engine blow, you know, like a rod poking out.
Sure.
And you just thought, here we go. We're coming up to straight down a straight that's going to cover, if it's going to cover the tyre, it will have done. So you knew he was going into a right-hander, then a left, and then a right. So it's going to, you know, one of them is going to bring him off if there's any oil on the tyre, which there clearly was, because it just, as it happened, I was just a bit concerned that he was going to get to Curva Grande and the accelerating, you know, and that's fast. And there's not a great deal of runoff there. So I was a bit concerned that he was going to end up going down fairly heavy. But as it was a gentle one. But, you know, Cal didn't come away, you know, not pleased. He was fairly pleased with the way the weekend went, even though, you know, the results, certainly second result, was disappointing. He was pleased with his speed and pleased with the way it went, really.
Sure, and frankly, that was like the perfect place from the crash because it is a, while it's a modified corner, it's still got some great runoff. And then I guess another question that I have to ask you, and please give me your more personalized and non-PC answer on this, is do you think they've done enough with the first chicane, or should we just have kind of a bit of a slowy loop through there and not have this bunching up?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be a problem. You know what? I mean, the reason they've been modifying that for years, well, firstly, in the early 70s, it was obviously to stop people piling into Curva Grande, you know, doing 200 miles an hour. Or in those days, I guess, under the 60 miles an hour. And the first chicane they ever had in there would appear to me to be the best, and that's the one I raced. It was kind of a double chicane. You know, you went kind of left, right, left, right. And it was perfect for bikes. There was never that many problems there. They altered it for cars. They altered it because of F1. And ever since they've been altering it, which is probably going back about 15 years, from that original double chicane, there's been problems. And, I mean, I actually looked at the new one when we got there on Friday and thought, God, that's going to be just as bad, you know, because although you don't have to stop and turn right and then stay slow for the left, I thought you're going to be rattling in there. The right's going to be fairly quick now, but you're still going to kind of stop for the left, and it's just going to move the funnel on a corner. But it, overall, I think it, you know, it did. Although there was that nasty one in Superbike 2,
yeah,
they did seem to be less trouble than what they were last year. That might be luck, it might be anything, but you know, I don't really see what they're going to do to sort of fix that without a major redesign of that area. And in a way, that almost take away from what the track is a little bit, you know. It's I'd like to ride it really and see what it's like.
Yeah, it's really hard to figure out a solution because you don't want to take away the personality of a racetrack.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you don't want to see people hurt. All right, so
yeah.
You and Jack, and frankly, there was some great comedic stuff on the broadcast about how two of you set out on scooters to do a lap, and his wobbling about. Did you ever, you know, kind of give him a little bump anywhere?
No, I tell you what, he amazes me, Jack. He reckons he's had a motorbike. He reckons he had a bike, a 250 James Captain or something, right, in the 60s. Well, if you give him a scooter now, he doesn't even know where to put the key. He couldn't find the keyhole for about 20 minutes. And then somebody came, he borrowed it off Kawasaki. It was Tom Sykes' bike. And eventually Tom Sykes came out of the hospitality unit and says, no, here's the keyhole. And then once he found the keyhole and turned it on, he got the lights on the dash. But he didn't realise you had to pull one of the brakes in to get it to stop. So he's thinking, hey, it's got a flat battery. So we finally got him going. And he got really confident with it. And the problem is, he's confident, and he's no idea that, you know, if you flick it on its side, that there's a fair chance you're going to crash, especially cold tyres. And I'm thinking, I'm following him around on another scooter thinking, he's probably going to go down somewhere. But he's just blissfully aware with a big grin on his face, you know. But anyway, it all worked out for the best. But he loves all that. I mean, Jack loves the history of it, and he loves kind of mixing it, going, you know, out with the ride. He gets always gets one of the riders to take him for a lap in his car or on a scooter. In this case, it was Cal Crutchlow on the Friday night and on his own on the Saturday. And he loves all that because he's never raced. He's never even ridden bikes that much. So to him, it's an amazing thing to get a lap round with, you know, Haslam or Crutchlow or whoever, you know.
Or some guy, you know, like you.
But he's funny because he knows me really well. He kind of doesn't, he'd much rather have somebody else's kind of opinion, you know. Not that he doesn't think mine's valid, but he'll go around with Crutchlow, and Crutchlow will sort of tell him, you know, you need to be here, you're breaking here. And then he's telling me, oh, you break here and you've got to be there on the track and this is the apex. I'm thinking, man, I've done about 1,000 laps around this place. But I let him get on with it. I don't tell him. I just say, oh, all right, okay.
Too funny, too funny. All right, so, yeah, with both in race two having both the Yamahas out, they're kind of screwed at this point. I mean, at least manufacturer standings.
Yeah, they are. They really are. They're really unlucky. I mean, I've got to say that Tolsland has been working his ass off, honestly.
Yeah.
He works hard. His only ethic, James, is just to work. He works hard, he trains hard, he puts as much effort as what he can into it. And they are making headway, but I've got to say, he a lot of the results he's had this year, he's dug them out of nowhere. You know, he's really struggled for him. You know, you know when he takes his helmet off, and he's a fit lad, you know, he does a lot of training. He's physically very strong, but yet he still looks like he's had hard work of it when he takes his helmet off, you know.
Yeah, well, he is the piano man. So what we've got, like, basically in the top six, I think, is you got Haslam with 181, Biaggi, like, now creeping up, and I think Haslam's only 3 points forward.
You got, 3 points, yeah.
Yeah, you got Johnny and Cheka tied for third, Tozen only 4 points behind, and Nori is like at 100, so it's still pretty tight there at the top if you think of it for the third spot on the season box. But again, there's still a lot of races to run.
Yeah, there's loads and loads of races to go. Too early to say anything. We've seen 60 point mid-season, we've seen 60 point leads disappear, and the person who led it at that point not win the championship twice in the last 4 years. So you can't call it. The way that Haslam's going, Haslam is scoring points every single race and doesn't look like crashing, and he's really confident. Also, you know, Biaggi is exactly the same now, seems to be at a score point, and he's quick. I'm hoping that Biaggi was only quick, you know, unbeatable at Monza because of the Monza circuit. But you never know. The next circuit they're going to now is the Kyalami this weekend. That's a real bumper, kind of old school, uppy, downy, kind of scratches paradise. And I'm thinking that possibly won't favour Biaggi as much. But, I mean, what I don't want at this point is anybody clean enough. You know, I want it so it's a good, close championship. And, you know, I mean, the Yamahas are getting stronger, but I don't know. At this point, for me, the two people who seem to be able to score points every weekend and not crash or break down seem to be Haslam and Biaggi.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And, frankly, I'm very happy to see Aprilia come so strong on it, especially in the second year, because, frankly, they probably just made minor modifications, with the exception of that whole cam thing. But to push it forward and to see actually Max have not only his racing spirit, but have a measure of humbleness, and I don't think that's feigned, do you?
No, no. I'll tell you what, he's been a revelation to me this year. He talks nicely, he thanks everybody, he talks really well, you know, he's very articulate, even in English, you know, which isn't his mother tongue. And he's good, I like him. And what amazes me is he's able to kind of still have the aggression and the will to win after how many seasons? He's 39 now, done it all, seen it all, and he still wants it. And, you know, you can't knock a man for that, he's still inside him.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. All right, let's zip through. I told you I was going to do 10 minutes. I'm such a liar. like you said, we start talking about racing and you can never stop. It's like three cases later of lager.
Yeah.
All right. World Supersport. MotoGP OD is a huge, and we cannot help it, Eugene Labrie fan, and it was a great weekend for him. Qualifying, though, was very interesting because Keenan spent, with the exception of, I believe it was FP1 or QP1 on Friday, looked like the man to beat. And, you know, we really have three guys at the top and nobody else, you know, with the exception of Pirro maybe, that has a shot at it. But give me a rundown for that race. Frankly, as I said earlier, it was kind of boring. Those three stretched off, but there were some incredible battles going on further back in the pack.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Supersport this year is about those three and nobody else really for the championship. Sofwan Glue wants to win so badly. He still is so keen. He doesn't like to lose. He gets really quite annoyed. But we saw it at Aston where he qualified on pole, had been quickest all, but didn't run away with it and got beaten, you know. Laverty is, for me, he's just a really rounded package. You know, he's had... We fell off in 40 miles, totally out of character. But everywhere else, he has been just so strong. He's such a good rider, a thinking rider. Doesn't worry about getting one quick lap in practice. Always has a race set up. Always has a plan. You know, he's one of them riders that just thinks any plan's better than no plan at all. And he always has a good one, you know. And he's a brilliant rider. I really, really rate Eugene Laverty.
Well, he also has, frankly, a brilliant team with a shitload of experience behind him too.
Yeah, he does, and I mean, love him or hate him, Simon Buckmaster, he's a good team manager, and he was a team manager at Suzuki. His first ever team management job was at Suzuki when I was racing factory superbikes for them, and he is a real good, well, he's good at everything, good organiser, raced himself, brilliant logistically, knows what, you know, he's a good team manager, and the rest of the team are as well, and they communicate really well, they all speak the same language well, with the exception of Eugene, who's obviously very, very thick Irish accent.
You know, what's funny is I interviewed for the show Michael Dunlop about 2 weeks ago, and it was over a cell phone. And God bless him, you know, I'm pretty good at understanding Northern Irish accents, but whew.
I tell you what he is. You know, the whole Dunlop family are just, they're just one-off.
Yeah,
you know, they're unbelievable people. But the funniest thing that's ever happened to me in racing happened in the Isle of Man this last year, 2009. And it, Michael's walking down the paddock, and he's got a pair of shorts on, like a really rubbish pair of football shorts, like silky football shorts, a scruffy T-shirt, a pair of workman boots, right, really white legs with black wispy hairs on, and he's got a pipe, like your granddad this morning, like a proper pipe that you put your thumb in the end of and puff away on, right? And he's smoking his pipe, and he's walking towards me, and I just went up to him and says, Michael, a pipe? And he took it out of his mouth, put it in my chest a couple of times and says, it's the future. And then just walked off. And left me in an uncontrollable laughing wreck. I couldn't believe it's the future. A pipe, for God's sake.
If maybe he'd melded out of, some Spec 7071.
But they're proper superstars. But no, Eugene Lafferty's absolutely brilliant, and I think he will take some beating in the championship. I tell you, he's a good lad, you know, underrated because he's so quiet. He's the score. Like him.
Yeah, no doubt.
Proper rider.
I totally agree, and you're right. And he is in at least in the super sport class. And frankly, the racing that he did before, he's at least on camera. And I didn't get a chance to talk to him last year. I'm going to make it a big point at Miller. Are you coming to Miller?
No, we know they can't afford to send us there, unfortunately.
Well, I can barely afford to send myself there, and I'm putting my pennies together and digging into the seat cushions, my friend. I'm going to make sure that I talk to him. Although the thing that kind of bugs me about him is that he has a tendency to not want to speak English. He might do it one-on-one. Anyway, no, Lascores is brilliant, and frankly, it is the one shining moment and impetus that KHI, Kawasaki Heavy Industries, needs to keep their road racing image up to snuff. And he is the guiding light.
Yeah, he's the man. And I tell you what, he can push so hard. You can see how hard he's pushing and not crash. And when he gets a sniff of something, you know, you saw Sofoglu in second making that mistake. And Lascores just thought, I can do this. And he did the same at Assen. He can just, when he wants to, and even on old tyres, knackered tyres, at the end of the race, he can push and push and push. We like him. He's a good lad.
Yep. And the other guy that, and he's been on the show a bunch of times, Senor Davis, he was a demon on the brakes into the chicanes. Man, I'm really surprised that the Triumphs could handle that. And himself and LeGrieve as well.
Yeah, to be honest, I was surprised with LeGrieve. LeGrieve's a lad I've raced with. He's been around a long time, drafted in to replace a rider that retired. So he's not... You know, you don't expect too much from him, and he rode really, really well. Chas Davis, and I think everybody on Triumphs, tended to struggle a little bit at Monza just because it's a speedball. And their strength is in the kind of grunt and the tractability of the engine, not so much the top speed. So I think they struggled a bit. And I think there's more to come from Chas. I think we'll see Chas. Man, I think he's got a roster in him this year, I do.
Do you think you see him second or first step, perhaps?
No, I think it struggled with the three that we've talked about, Lascores, Sofoglu, and Lafferty. I think he'll struggle to win one, but I think he's definitely capable of a roster of two this year.
Okay, and we lost our female for this, financial or results or what?
I don't know. I absolutely don't know. This is the one that we thought we'd see her at, but no, we haven't. I have no idea. We didn't hear anything about it.
Okay, and
sorry not to help you on that.
And the bit that you guys did when both pre-race and post-race on arms just was classic, because when he went out, oh, there's a red helmet. Okay, well, now we know where he is again. Foray on the satellite Kawasaki seems to be getting on with it well. Didn't do well this weekend, but...
Just a lucky again, and Foray is I like Foray. He's very serious. I've raced with him a bit. He was a young kid when I was just towards the end of my super sport career, and I kind of like him. You know, he's a good lad. He's fast. Things have to go his way. Things have to be just so. But he can ride a bike still, and you never really can sort of write him out. You know, the bike's not bad either, but it's unreliable, and that's the second weekend on the trot. You know, Assen. It blew a water pipe off, and he pitched himself off. And this weekend it was, what was it? I don't know, just an engine blown, I think.
So he's really,
I spoke to him actually. He was, saw him coming out of his hospitality on Sunday night, and last night he was really disappointed. But he says he'll come, and he's pleased to have the speed. And I think, you know, there's, we haven't probably seen the last of him this year either.
Yeah, well, it seemed like he spent a really good portion of 2009 pretty pissed off because the results were coming more to Cal than they were to him, and he had a fair amount of big offs. And I see pictures, and I see videos, and I see everything that I can, and he's got a smile on his face these days, which is nice to see.
Yeah, a lot better. He's a kind of serious kid, though. And he's not you know, the life and soul of the paddock, but... He's quite pleased that he's got the speed still. You know, he's quite pleased that it's not all over, if you know what I mean. He can still run quick times. And he said to me last night, he said, look, if it keeps going, I'll have some results, you know. So he's fairly confident he's not done yet.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So,
tell me that you saw the, did you get any of the Superstock 600?
How many were left at the end? Like less than half the field?
Yeah, 9, 21 starts. Started and finished. Unbelievable.
Well, Superstock 1000 wasn't much better. I mean, it makes you wonder. Well, I don't actually know what to say about it. Throw me your thoughts on Superstock 600, because that was just a land of carnage.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Superstock was a complete bloodbath. I mean, I don't think anybody got badly hurt, not to what we could find. I would try his best to find out that everybody's kind of, you know, got up and walked away. And as far as we know, everybody virtually did. But just running into it, not classic crashes either, not sliding off under your own, you know, just because you're pushing hard. They always seem to just want to run into each other, ram each other, you know, smack in the back of each other. It's really flipping. I mean, it's a lot of young lads going really, really quick, you know, real high speed straights, breaking down at a slower chicanes and stuff, and it just seemed to be not the place for them, you know. Anywhere there's less than half a field, and it's not a massive field anyway. It just don't look so good. It looks fairly not that professional.
Well, and frankly, Monza is a place where, as you've said and is well known, that everything is about keeping up corner speed, because especially on a stock bike, basically it's like no brakes, right?
Yeah, what you've got to do with a stock bike is come out of the corner quick, keep your speed going. You can't make that many mistakes. So if you make a mistake in a corner, you're going to be suffering for sort of 2 miles afterwards down the straight. But I tell you what, it was a telling thing on the Superstock 600 warm-up lap, there was three bikes damaged, right? One beyond repair, bent exhaust. One got the frontal damage because the bike had knocked the exhaust off. And one had lever broken, I think. But you just think, that's a warm-up lap. Just unreal.
All right, so current standings there, the score is 101, Safuaglu 97, and Eugenian at 91, so only 10 back. We've got Davies and Salom, pair of teammates, tied at 55, Davies at 55, and Salom and Rhea tied it at basically 5th and 6th. What did you think of the weekend? Did it have that still historical Monza feel to it? I know that's a circuit that's kind of infamous for being difficult to get in and out of.
Yeah, I love the place. I really love the place. It always seems to give good racing. It did this time. I mean, Super Sport a little bit steady. Every other race, really good. Lots of incidents. I mean, I don't really like to see people fall off, but, you know, if there's a crash or two and they get up and walk away, that's part of the job, I guess. And I really enjoyed it. I even enjoy the way they let the crowd wander onto the track afterwards and come into the paddock and just everything about it. It's not a circuit that's too over kind of clean, or the grass isn't always perfectly manicured. It's a little bit used and kind of just has a lovely, lovely feel to it. It really has. If I had to choose one circuit to go and work with Eurosport each year, it'd be Monza. It's just a real nice feel to it.
Have you been to Indy yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Christ. Okay, you need to talk to, like, Toby and Jules and everybody else that has been to Indy, and they will all tell you, James, go to Indy. Go there at least once.
Same thing. I'll tell you what, speaking of Indy, I've seen the TZ 750 flat tracker lap that daft old Roberts did at the end of last year, and I cannot believe it. I cannot. But I mean, I know him quite well. I worked with him for a year with that three-cylinder Medina's bike back in '99, and you can't not like and respect Kenny Roberts. It's Kenny Roberts. But I tell you what, that was impressive. Impressive.
I'll send you an email, a video that one of my co-hosts shot from there on the entrance to turn three, although, you know, on those ovals, I don't even think you should name corners. You just say, okay, that's the turn after that one. Come over. Make plans. You know, even if you're not, well, frankly, you know what? Come over. I'll treat you as well as I can in my best way, and we'll do a show. Wow. How cool would that be, Jim?
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Jim and James. Wonder that, MotoGPOD followers. I went way longer. Senor Witham, thank you so much.
Yeah, cheers, Jim. It's always a pleasure anytime, man. You know that.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to, Kyle Almeida this weekend. And that's an awesome track. You know what? That track reminds me of sort of a, not necessarily the layout, but in taking Portimao and actually stretching it like some goo, because the elevation changes from top to bottom are far larger than they are on any other World Superbike circuit.
Yeah, one of the highlights of any racing career, if you've ridden there, is plunging down the mine shaft from the hairpin at the top. Just unreal. And it's one of my iconic bits of track that there is nothing like it. And I absolutely loved Kailama. One of the things about the place is when you go, particularly with the Supersport bike, because it's so high above sea level, it's like about 5,000 feet above sea level, your bike is so slow. Yep. It's like getting on a, it's like you've lost a, in fact, the first time I went there with a YZF 750, I came in after a lap and said, there's something wrong with this thing. And they said, no, that's what it'll be like. And everybody's bike's slow, and it's true. But it's a beautiful place, really good circuit.
Well, and so I have a question that I do have to ask you before I wrap this up. And I'm halfway through your book. Do you still have your original NBA 125?
Yeah, I've got it in the garage now, and it's 3/4 of the way through being rebuilt. I've just waited for some brake discs being made, and what else am I waiting for? Some bodywork and a tank, and apart from that, it's all it's ready. It'll be like brand new in about 6 months.
Sweet. Are you gonna do an exhibition race or a real race?
It'll run. It's going to run, and it'll run well, but the crank is 3/4 life, and the crank's impossible to get. The rods are impossible to get, so I'm probably not going to do any serious racing on it, to be honest.
Okay, and the final and last question is, and I'm going to leave this in here for the listeners so that I kind of edge you in a corner. I'd like to talk to Mick Grant, and so you need to make that happen for me.
Yeah, I can do that. Mick's all right. He's got some opinions. You like that?
Gee, don't we all?
Yeah, the best of us, I think. Yeah.
I don't think there's a bike racer that doesn't. Yeah. All right, James. Many, many thanks. Best of enjoyment in the coming days, and give us some good stuff from Kyalami, and we will talk to you soon.
Cheers, Jim.
All right, cheers. But he does make some rather cogent points, and many of those I do agree with, and I hope that those are taken heart by the folks at In Front Motorsports, who I'll be talking with at Miller, if they'll let me in now.
Louder than this.
I can imagine. Well, I guess they don't have beers at the lounges in Dubai, do they?
Well, beer lounges.
Oh, okay. All right.
We're an Irish bar. Well, we were an Irish bar, yeah.
Okay. So you're not at the airport?
Yeah, I'm in the airport.
Okay. All right. Who all is there with you?
I'm just with a team.
Jim Race here for MotoGPOD on the line with me in far-off Dubai in the international airport. Sneaking around an Irish pub is Chaz Devies. How are you doing, Chaz?
I'm good, thanks. Not too bad.
Good. You know, it's kind of, when we've got these back-to-back race weekends, you know, you're going from Monza, Italy, you know, all the way down to Kyalami in South Africa. It seems like Dubai seems to be the standard jump-off port for these kind of runs.
Yeah, it does seem to be that way for the Italian flights. Anyway, like connecting through Dubai with Emirates is quite a bit easier than, any other way of doing it from Italy, whereas from London you can go pretty much direct to Johannesburg. But yeah, that's quite nice. I have a few hours here on the way down, break it up a little bit, have something to eat, and you know, we've only got another 6 hours left or something just to get to Johannesburg now.
Cool, and we know that you're heading towards a track that you haven't run before, correct?
Yep, that's right. I'm in the middle of a few. Well, Assen was half new to me, Monza was new, and this one's new. Kyalami will be new to me, so yeah, in the middle of a few new ones for myself, learning in a few more, and actually looking forward to getting back to places that I actually know.
Yeah, I bet. So let's take a step back to Monza, because we'll zip through this quickly. Going to have a real busy show this week. You qualified ninth. The weather was a bit dodgy, but not as bad as they'd predicted, correct?
Yeah, it was really on and off all weekend. Friday and Saturday, it had rained in both our morning sessions, both on Friday, after I think I'd done four laps, and then it started raining. And then Saturday morning was the same again. It was just kind of half damp. And you know, it's just the kind of the conditions that which are a great deal of fun. You can't learn anything because it wasn't fully wet, and you couldn't learn anything because it wasn't fully dry. So it's just that sort of not fun conditions. But there you go.
And to be honest, and I think everybody knew this, that while the Triumphs have great off corner speed and certainly excellent braking, and I'm going to talk to you about that in a few minutes, but we all know Monza is a super high-speed track, and that it would probably be a little bit difficult for you guys to cling to the front, although you did a valiant effort. Do me a favor, just in brief, walk me through, and then I'm going to talk about braking. I'm going to talk about braking with you, because you are a wizard, dude.
Well, the top speed actually isn't that bad. I think because they searched so hard for the top speed on our bike, because generally out of the box that is the weak point of the three cylinder. You know, you take advantage of the torque compared to the four cylinders. Because they searched for it so hard, that's been not really a problem at top speed. It's actually getting there which was a struggle for me. Coming off the not so much the Parabolica but the Legend 2 was my difficult point all weekend. Getting up there, getting going, it just seemed like I was lacking a little bit the whole weekend getting off there, and it was hurting me a massive amount. So it wasn't a great race. I'd say I enjoyed it. It was a very good battle, and thanks that I came out on top of the battle, but it was just, you know, not where we need to be. It's too far away. We knew it was going to be a difficult weekend going in, but still, it's really no excuse. There's for sure we could improve at that track.
Yeah, and so On corner entry, the one thing that just blew me away was that, and it's surprising because the weight of the Triumph is a little bit heavier than the traditional I4s, I think. Is that correct?
A little bit, yeah, down to the rules. I think we're more or less at the limit, but yeah, I think down to the rules we are a little bit heavier. Not a great deal, but
yeah,
a little bit less.
But it seemed like the bike was actually quite stable underneath you. And, you know, you'd hit that bump at Ascari, for example, at mid-lean with a pretty good brake on, and watching a lot of the other bikes that would just completely unsettle themselves, you actually had what looked to be something that was entirely controllable and were making passes under braking that every time. I'm very, very impressed. I mean, and that's not from a spectator viewpoint. That is from a racer standpoint, because I've seen that, and I know how hard it is to do. And you had a battle. You know, I'm wondering if you have a grudge against Gino Ria, because, man, you guys fought tooth and nail.
Well, not really, but you just want to beat whoever that you're racing with. You know, it's just down on speed, so I was making myself wide all weekend. We were just lacking that bit, whereas every time that I get past, I just instantly have a go back and just try and stay in front. At the time, you know, the guys obviously thought they were quicker than me because they tapped their feet as if, you know, hang on if you can sort of thing. That was one of the first times you come past me. And I thought, righto, well, I'll sit here for four or five laps and let's see what you can do. And we got three laps down the road and they're lapping half a second slower than whatever I was, half a second, 6 tenths. And I wasn't lapping particularly quick because we were in the middle of a battle. And, so I kind of let them lead and do their thing, and then the pace got slowed down. So then I went back to the front I made myself extremely wide and extremely late on the brakes for the last three laps and just managed to stay out front. So that was okay. But in terms of the braking, you know, corner entries actually in the Lesmos was difficult for me, getting into the corner and getting out of them quickly. Sky wasn't too bad, but sort of a slightly higher gear corner where you can roll through it a little bit more. You can get off the brakes a bit earlier. So that kind of settles the rear back down. But no, I just wasn't just not happy the whole weekend. So we can improve everywhere.
Well, and at least your results ended up garnering you some additional points, and perhaps not close enough for you to the top three boys, but certainly holds you in good stead, still in fourth, right?
Yeah, in fourth in the championship. The next track, I think, is quite a bit tighter, Kyle Army, so I'm looking forward to that. And then obviously Miller, I know, so that would be nice to get back there again and get out of these big, wide-open circuits. So, yeah, it'll be good.
I think they put a whole bunch of trees up on the inside of corners at Miller, so you can't really have good sight lines anymore.
Oh, yeah? Oh, well. That'll have something to it.
I made that up.
All right, okay. I was going to say, I would look a little bit out of place there, but, you know, the only scenery is just the mountains. There's not too many trees there. But
a few hedgerows and fences like the aisle.
Yeah.
So you're hanging out there. You're heading down. It's currently Tuesday, and the show will come out on Friday. It's Tuesday there, too. What time is it there?
First thing Wednesday morning. It's 2:25 a.m.
Yeah. Okay. Have you gone back and studied any of the footage, say, from last year at Kyalami?
Yeah, I've watched the race from last year. Obviously played PlayStation Man there quite a bit. Yep, studied plenty, so.
Well, you know, there was a Triumph running in, I think it was fourth or fifth last year, until he crashed out near the end of the race.
Yeah, Nannelli was up there last year. He was having a pretty good race, and he ended up dropping it. I think Gary struggled a little bit last year. That was one of not so good races, sixth or seventh, he might have finished.
Yep.
They said it wasn't a bad track for them last year. They turned up, and they were quite competitive. And of course, it was new for everybody last year as well. So.
Yeah.
But it's not one of them tracks where people have got hundreds of laps on. It's just one race weekend on it for most of the guys, so hopefully that should help us out a little bit more.
No, but it is a track that clearly looks to be fun. It's kind of like Barber if you stretched it vertically, you know. You've got these massive up and downs, and, you know, everybody that I've talked to says that it's basically a really fun track to race and should probably provide a fair amount of equalization between the various bikes, particularly within the Supersport class.
Hopefully. It does look a fun track. Looks very technical. Looks quite different, actually. Looks like there's a lot of fast corners that you lead into that slowly tighten up a little bit. So we'll find out in a couple of days' time.
Cool. Well, I just want to get in touch with you and say hello again, and I thank you for taking your time. We should be having the weather looks like it's going to be great down there as well. Last I checked. But you know what? I don't believe anything, because frankly, the weather was supposed to be shit at Monza on Sunday, and it was fine.
Yeah, no, it was threatening, though. It was threatening. At any point, it could have actually rained and kind of wet the track for the afternoon. Same Friday and Saturday, and it did rain. It was always, it was a bit iffy all weekend.
But, you know, in the end, it came out all right.
Yeah.
And I am, you know, let me drop back. Were you surprised to see LaGrieve come past you?
No, not really. He was going pretty good there all weekend. He was quite consistent from the start. He was going quite good there. He had a good race there last year. I'm not sure where he finished, but he said it was one of his good places last year. So no, obviously I didn't want him to come past, but there wasn't really a lot I could do once he did come by. I had to go sticking in there for a bit, and it was too quick for me on Sunday. So hopefully, you know, that won't happen too often. So.
And Eugene just cleared off the front, and those top two guys, it was like 19 seconds back, amazing. And I'm hoping for Eugene's sake that he can pull the hat trick. You may not be hoping that, but impressions of the, well, you'd never had anything different, so you don't know, but what did you think of the first chicane?
Better, I think, from what I've looked at. Obviously, I haven't had anything different, but what I could see from last year, well, you could say that it made for a safer first chicane, but then you have the accident in the second superbike race. So, but I think it's being a little bit more open like that, it looks better. And it doesn't look quite so, you know, stop-start. It hasn't just been plonked in there just to slow it down. It kind of forced that a little bit. So I thought it was quite good, actually.
Cool. Were you topping out in sixth gear?
Yeah,
were you bouncing off the rev limiter, or did you just have to kind of hang?
Nah, not on the rev limiter, but get it up there towards the end of the front straight.
Okay. Which is always kind of fun, because that doesn't always happen.
No, not always. Yeah, quite rarely, actually, you get the bike revving that hard for quite so long. You get in there, especially once you get in a draft in the race, you really get sort of sucked along there, and she was screaming.
Yeah, it's really easy to get sucked in, especially if you're coming into a corner and you've got a couple of people wide, but that are, you know, providing this entire wall of air for you to ride through. But I think you did.
Yeah.
I think you did a great job, and I think you should take away what you did and keep going forward. And I really look forward to watching the races at Kyalami this weekend, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's one of our worst weekends out of the way. We'll just, you know, get back to it at Kyalami. We've been different ways of set up now, and we kind of need to start following one path rather than a couple. So
okay.
Hopefully we'll start getting a little bit more consistent, and then we'll, you know, we're learning every weekend, all I am. So can't be too bad.
It sounds like you're kind of bummed about it, and frankly, from at least my outside perspective, I thought you guys had a good weekend. You weren't on the box, granted. You had not only a fair amount of successful battles in particular areas, but you certainly got a shitload of airtime.
Yeah, but, you know.
I know.
Having tons of airtime and being in wherever, I don't even know where I finished, sixth or seventh. Where was I?
You're
one of the two.
Yeah.
Seventh, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's, they could just show me in and being in 50th place, and so that would be terrible.
Yeah.
It's not about that for me. Obviously, it's very important for the team, but I'm there for a result, and we didn't get it. So
yeah,
I'm disappointed. But we got six races left or whatever.
Yeah, you're one of those racers that are not happy unless, or not even pleased if they're not in the box. And they're kind of maybe, he'll smile if he's in second, but I know where you want to be.
Yeah, well, when you get sniffs of podiums and you just, when you see a gap like the guys were able to put into us on the weekend,
yeah,
we know why, but it's nothing that we can change overnight. It's going to be kind of a long process, and we need to start with a test and start working away at a few things. But anyway, you know, there's going to be tracks which do play into our hands a little bit more, so we can't dwell on the ones that don't too much.
Sure. Okay, well, cheers.
And there's probably more which are good for us than which aren't any good for us, but that's good.
Yeah, we are heading into the twisty bit of the season. I do want to say congratulations to you for, hey, you got out of there uninjured. Not a lot can be, there's a few people that can't say that.
Yep.
I'm going to be heading off to Sears Point for this whole weekend because AMA is running there along with the new TTX GP series. And
all right.
If there's anything you'd like me to pass along to any of your cohorts in the pits, any pithy statements or anything, you've got an opportunity to do it now, and it'll actually be on air. So anybody you want to say hello?
No, I'm sure I'll see most people at Miller, sir.
Okay.
I'll catch up with them then.
Cool. You'll see me too there as well.
Okay.
All right. Cheers.
That's good.
Have a good flight, and have a great race, sir.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
So I think that's one of those sentences you really have to read between the lines, because Simon has a very quietly caustic way of saying things. Anyway, to continue, one last thing, whilst Superbike has such strong manufacturer support from Yamaha, Suzuki, Aprilia, Ducati, BMW, and Kawasaki, and no one thinks there is any problem at all, just scratch the surface and see. After the second BMW team dropped out, after just two races, there are now only 22 riders on the grid. Now, DFX Ducati is pulled out of the flyaway races. That is another alarm call. He further and finishes up with this. Like I said, I love the atmosphere and the people in the World Superbike paddock. In front, please invest now and give the teams a better deal. When I came here first, back in the late 90s, we had a freight package air tickets and hotel rooms for flyaway events, plus participation allowance for European events. Now, we pay for the show. We should at the very least get all our tires and the entry fee free if we compete the whole season. And as for having to pay a fee for the official test, that is just beyond belief. And I pulled that out of what Simon had sent out today. You may or may not agree with all of it, but he does make some rather cogent points, and many of those I do agree with, and I hope that those are taken heart by the folks at In Front Motorsports, who I'll be talking with at Miller, if they'll let me in now. So yeah, just remember, Northwest 200 is running this weekend. Check for the link. I'm currently recording this bit, the opening bit, on Thursday afternoon, California time, which essentially means in just several hours we'll be having a bunch of stuff up. But the BBC already has a whole bunch of cool stuff that you can go ahead and listen to. And again, it is all free. Live streaming, the quality is really good. Hello, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and on the line with me from, and I believe you're in Johannesburg, correct me if I'm wrong, is Tom Sykes. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Have you been out to the track yet?
Yeah, obviously, at the track today. Today is a setup day, so yeah, we had a press day this morning, and got to go to the South African World Cup Stadium, which was very good, and got to score a couple of goals, so yeah, bonus.
Well done. Did were you playing with your fellow Englishmen over there?
Yeah, obviously we went with eight other manufacturers, so very good day out, and looking forward to the racing this weekend.
Excellent. So one of the reasons I wanted to call you was because it seems like you're coming to terms with the ZX10 this year, and we were all, you know, a little bit worried about that, but it looks like you're coming on. You especially had a good time in the last race. Is the bike coming around to you, or are you coming around to the bike?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both there, to be honest. And obviously, I think where we're at is, you know, this year Kawasaki are putting a fantastic amount of effort in. And I think that's down to the reason that they're wanting to focus now on the World Superbikes and change their fortunes around. So obviously, I'm very pleased to be part of that. I've got a great team and manufacturer behind me. And I think we're at the stage now where we're starting to close the gap on the front, but we've still got work to do. And obviously, I think it's going to be something that we can't achieve overnight. And I'm certain that in the near future, i.e. the next year or two, we can make some real good inroads and run at the front.
Good. Now, are you on a 2-year deal?
No, myself, I'm just on the 1-year deal.
Okay. There has been words and whispers and that Kawasaki is going to be coming out with a pretty seriously revised leader bike next year. Without you giving anything away, I'm assuming that's something you're probably looking forward to if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they've had a lot of information back in the last couple of years and also this year from myself and Chris, so I'm pretty confident that Kawasaki will be able to roll out a fantastic bike next year. And obviously I think number one for myself would be to try and be part of that. You know, I'm really at home here with the team, and certainly working with Kawasaki, it would be the ideal scenario to carry on that relationship. Having said that, yeah, I'm on a 1-year deal, and I just know I need to keep pushing and pulling in the results for myself and also for Kawasaki.
Indeed, and we also look forward to that as well and like seeing you up there near the front. Can you compare, you know, it's kind of interesting. Over the last 3 years, you went from a Suzuki to a Yamaha, now on a Kawasaki, and each of those has their very unique and unusual differences. Coming into the Kawi this year, what did you find that you had to work to either ride around or what its advantages were?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, without giving too much away, I think everyone knows the situation. But on the Kawasaki, things were, you know, it's got some really strong points. Unfortunately, the weak point is for us some of the corner entry, which obviously over race distance, we're not able to maintain some of the lap times. So it's a little bit of a compromise at the moment, but, you know, we're working on that and, you know, certainly getting the bike a lot better. And like you said, I've ridden of different manufacturers in the recent years, and obviously still last year I felt that I certainly didn't reach my potential and the bike's potential. So, yeah, this year with the Kawasaki, we're kind of limited on what we can do, but obviously everyone's giving full effort and we're certainly getting there.
I well imagine that you want to, one of your goals, if you can achieve it, because your previous best in World Superbike was actually as a wild card at Donnie back in 2008, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Well, so going forward and going on in this year, I can see, you know, it is in a way a building year. You know, I talked to James Witham the other day, and he gave me a little bit of information about Monza that sort of made me laugh, and it's hard to talk to James without laughing, but I do have to commend you for teaching Jack Burnicle the fine art of starting a pit scooter. It's good to see our riders helping out senior citizens in need.
No, I mean, that's... Like I said, Jim's a good guy, and you know I live very local to Wickham, so yeah, we're also good pals, and he's certainly a good rider in the past years.
Absolutely. What do you think of Kyalami as a circuit? It's certainly got some very interesting elevation changes and some both fast and flowing corners, but a whole lot of stop and go. Is this a circuit you're going to feel confident at?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I enjoy all circuits, and like you said, with the results I've had in 2008 as a wild card, you know, I'm confident in my ability to run at the front, and you know, there's a number of riders who all believe the same. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing, but. At the moment, you know, we just need to aim to get things right, and, you know, when things are right, I know I can run up the front. And Kyalami is one of them tracks where, to be honest, it's a very bumpy track, very undulating, and last year the Kawasaki seemed to work well here with the wildcard Sheridan Mariah, so
sure.
Obviously I'm hoping to go a lot better and still keep it inside the top 10.
Yeah, did you pick his brain at all, or is he is he not helping out?
No, I mean, he's here this weekend riding for another manufacturer, and yeah, I've not really had a chance to speak to him. I know he did a good job for Kawasaki last year, like I said, so all we need to do is do what we did at Monza, you know, try and start strong and finish stronger.
Indeed. All right, well, I know that you need to get off and get yourself some food, and I thank you for taking a brief time with us. Maybe later in the year, we'll get you down for a little bit longer call, and I wish you the best of luck this weekend. It's looks like temperature's going to be a little bit warm, not too bad though, right?
Yeah, obviously, I think if we can keep the sun away, you know, that'll also suit the Kawasaki, but obviously no problem talking to you. Sorry we've had to cut it short, but for sure, look forward to chatting to you later in the year.
Excellent. Well, you have yourself a great time, and we'll talk to you soon. And just to close out, a reminder, both myself, Jules Cisek, who y'all remember from the show, you'll remember Liam Schubert, who has been on the show multiple times, will all be at Infineon Raceway in Northern California this weekend, starting on Friday. So I'm struggling to get the show out pretty quickly on Thursday night so that I can get myself all packed up and ready to go. We'll be there for the AMA Nationals as well as the inaugural North American TTX GP Series with the electric bikes, which I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do, especially, you know, around the TT track at the Isle is a lot different than a short circuit. And I'm very, very curious, and I imagine I'll have a lot of information about that next week, as well as a fair amount of interviews, and I'll have to mix that up with everything that comes out of Kyalami. So I can pretty much say that next week is going to be a long show, because I know I'm going to have to pull probably the second part of Eskil Suter's interview into that. You never know. I might. And in fact, I'm thinking about this, and those of you that are fans of MotoGPOD on Facebook – I do intend over the weekend to put up, as I do them, audio snippets of interviews that I can kind of sneak in. Probably put them up just about every evening in California time, at least throw one or two up and give you guys the opportunity to sort of listen in and get an idea, probably horribly or non-edited, but at least to give you guys a chance. And there are a fair amount of people there this week. There should be a good thing. So I thank you very much for downloading the show. Please take a look at the show links for this. And I hope you enjoyed it. And we will talk to you with boundless information next week. Thanks a bunch. And we will talk to you later. Cheers. Bye.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGP OD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.